Are we connected? Yes, we are. Honourable Minister, you are welcome with your team. We really appreciate your presence in this meeting and also the high-level delegation from your department. It is commendable by the committee. Thank you very much. All members, we are starting our meeting today after I attended a meeting as an event by Home Affairs. I think I must talk about this. We were invited, board chairpersons, by the department to attend an event where the department was officially opening Desmond Tutu Refugees Reception Center or offices. I must say that I was so impressed with the innovation that is done by the department. That this is not the first one of this kind, but I must say, honourable members, if we can have such offices around the country, most of the problems we have in the department could be resolved, especially where if we can have these offices in our port of entry, because most of the problem could be resolved at that level before people get deep in the country where we don't have a way of dealing with them. Very good, innovative by the department. Minister, we thank you very much. How I wish that other departments that we are responsible for as a committee, as you know that we are also responsible for Department of Health, Department of Social Development, Water and Sanitation, as well as Human Settlement, especially the two departments, Department of Health and Department of Social Development. Most of the problems that they are facing could be resolved because the system is already there. It's a question of customizing it to their department. But what is left with us, honourable members, once these centres or technology that they have now is implemented throughout, it will be left of us to fast-track the border management agency bill that is coming to us. Because once we have that agency, even if you can have that good system that they have, but if our border lines are open as they are in some of the areas, our problem could not be solved in terms of controlling people coming in and out of the country. But the innovation that is there, the system, the technology that is there, is high-level technology. It's more of paperless, the paperless system. So you will not have people duplicating papers or forms for people as part of corruption that is happening now. It's a paperless system. Everything is done on the system. Thank you very much, Minister. We really appreciate as a committee. You are one of the departments that we, I know Honorable Pambosbuwane will agree with me, we are proud of, in terms of the work that you are doing as a department. All members, we've invited the department to present their annual report. As we indicated when they presented their plan last year, that we will be doing our oversight. They will come and account on what they had said they will do. Minister, we're not expecting anything that you don't know. Is what you presented to us that you were going to do in the previous financial year, we will want to know how far did you go in terms of the implementation on those areas where you were not able to implement. What were the challenges? Are the areas where you think the committee could assist in terms of dealing with the challenges? That is what we're expecting from the department. Honourable members, we've been meeting with the department for quite a number of time. Unless there are new appointments from your side, Minister, you can indicate it, but I don't think that we have to introduce ourselves. We know each other by now. Over to you, Honourable Minister. I'm not sure how you have structured your presentation, but over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members. I take this opportunity, Chair, to greet you and greet the fellow members of the of Parliament and the officials and guests of the committee. I must from the outset express my sincerest gratitude, Chair, at your kind words about the department. We continue to try improve our services under serious resources constraints. If you consider the fact that the department has about 411 offices, and the challenge that the country faces in regard to the services required from the department are so enormous that the current number of offices and service sites that we have is wholly inadequate. The human resource capacity we have is equally inadequate. And this means that we face enormous challenges in terms of facing up to the challenges. Just to cite a few examples, perhaps just three or four. The first one is that if rural development is the priority of government, if rural development is the priority of government, the department should be having sufficient offices in rural areas. Because the existence of Home Affairs, as we have said, is not just in relation to issuing documents. It is in relation to supporting economic activity, because the documents we issue are vital for economic, to facilitate economic and financial transactions. You need to know who are South Africans and who are not. You need to know to have these documents to open bank accounts, get employment, go to university, even to start grade one and travel abroad. You need to issue these documents in order to facilitate the entrance into our country of tourists, investors, people with critical skills, and to be able to manage economic migrants and refugees. So if rural development is important, it's not important merely so that people in rural areas could survive poverty by receiving social grants. In the main, it is to facilitate productive economic activity. And for that to happen, you then need the Department of Home Affairs, amongst others, as a backbone department, providing the services we have to provide to children, to people who are 16 years old and above, identifying immigrants in those villages, and ensure that people in rural areas don't have to travel to town to seek government offices, which they ought to be receiving in the areas where they live. That encourages people to spend their money outside the areas in which they live. And it has been said that critical to economic development is the ability of a people to circulate their money among themselves first before they can send it abroad. That's why most countries would rather export than import, because when you export, you make money. When you import, you buy things from someone else abroad. But the same applies to our urban infrastructure. Our urban infrastructure is largely in towns. So in South Africa, with the big black townships that you have, it's only Soweto and Eslo that have home affairs offices. In Zwelisha, you don't have a home affairs office. In Nanda, no. KwaMashu, no. Tuzuma, no. Phoenix, no. Verelem, no. And that means that the people of Umlazi must go to Isiphingo to seek home affairs offices at prospecting or go to town. Which then, you know, if somebody earns a wage and you say to them, go apply for your ID in Durban, but come back and do your grocery at Umlazi, they are not going to do that. They would rather make a single trip, which means the money they could spend at Umlazi leaves Umlazi, will never stay there. Because by forcing them to seek public services in the city, you discourage them from spending their resources in the township, which means all those millions of people from Umlazi who work, whatever their level of income, their money, we don't encourage their money to circulate at Umlazi, because we draw them, we pull them out of Umlazi towards the cities where they spend their money. And so you don't then have to be surprised when the township economy relies on spaza shops, relies on hair saloons, car washes, and these menial economic activities. It is because even if you were to encourage productive economic activity in the township, but if government services are found outside the township, then people have no incentive to spend their incomes here. Then you go to Umgeni, which is at the intersection of an industrial hub, a major transport hub with taxis and the biggest train station in Durban, 5 townships, KwaMashu, Ntuzuma, Inanda, Phoenix, Verelem, all without a home affairs office, depending therefore on Umgeni for services. Don't be surprised when Umgeni seems to battle under pressure and the service is not to the level you want, and people stand in long queues and our officials can't fulfill these queues. It's because we are not strategically located. We are not strategically located. We therefore impose enormous burdens on a few offices, and make it difficult for people to access offices. And add to that the challenge that because we celebrate the tightening of the belt, we applaud it as something good, it's good, but it has a social consequence, and the social consequence is that you're not going to employ enough people and you will not have overtime pay capacity. So if your officials have to work on a Saturday between 8:30 and 1, don't expect them to remain open until 3, because the DG doesn't have the money to pay them overtime. Overtime is for limited occasions, such as the festive season, the Easter season, but to be able to keep our offices open for the whole day on Saturday, which would be convenient for most people who work midweek and students who go to school, is then impossible. That also then has an impact on our ability to roll out the e-home affairs program. So you've piloted your services with the banks, it works. thousands of people have applied for their IDs and passports through the banks, but you could roll it out. At one stage, one bank offered to give us 100 branches to roll out. Now, if one bank gives us 100 branches and there are four banks involved with the possibility of adding a fee, so if we take these four and each one of them gave us 400 branches, it meant that Home Affairs would, in a stroke of a pen, have 811 service points across the country. But the problem is, you don't have personnel. And that's where we are now stuck. You do not have personnel for these branches that you are talking about. So, and the problem of resolving the personnel challenge is not really that difficult. It's not intractable. It can be solved if all the departments involved applied their innovative heads, put on their innovative heads, and we solved the problem. From where we sit as Home Affairs, the problem could be solved. But the decision to solve the problem doesn't depend on us. It depends on someone else. So I'm highlighting these four challenges, Chair, to say we are performing against these massive obstacles. And they are not necessarily obstacles that face us, but they face us even more because, unlike anyone else, Home Affairs serves all South Africans at multiple points in their life, at multiple stages in their lives, but it also serves all immigrants, whether they are documented or undocumented, because even the undocumented immigrants, you need to be able to facilitate their repatriation. And the resources we have to manage repatriation are limited, and from where we sit, repatriation in itself is not a sustainable solution. Effective border management is an effective solution, more sustainable, to encourage anybody entering the country to enter South Africa through ports of entry. Because even the National Defense Force, out of the 22 units it has that should be deployed on our borderline, they only have deployed 15. So we don't even have the 3,000 that we need. And that is because they also complain about lack of resources. So there are areas in the country that pose a challenge. Your Ngwavuma area, your Bait Bridge area, because especially now with the recent drought, people simply could walk across the Limpopo River without having to be, at least when there was water, the crocodiles at some points would act as immigration officers. But now, in the absence of that, you face a challenge. We're not saying this, I want to reiterate, we're not saying this to complain. And the good thing is, we're not saying it to explain why we are underperforming, because we are actually overperforming against the odds. And that's the good thing. And the report that the Director General and the team will present will speak to the 36 targets we had set ourselves. It will address itself to the four outcomes for which we are responsible. It will address the five ministerial priorities which I had outlined in the department and I stated in the budget vote of 2015-2016. And it will speak to the work we are doing overall with a particular emphasis on our civic services and our immigration services, because those two are ultimately the core mandate of the Department of Home Affairs. The department continues to be faced with enormous legacy challenges, which we think now more than at any other stage, we are in a better position to resolve on a sustainable basis. Because you will remember that in the year 2013-2014, we received an unqualified audit. Was it? Huh? No, no, no. When the 20? Yeah. 10-11, yes. We got an unqualified audit in 10-11, and immediately thereafter we receded back to a disclaimer. And we've been struggling with this as a result of really legacy issues, some of which, or most of which, or maybe many of which we think have now been resolved. We are in a better position to move forward with the confidence that soon the department will be able to report positively on our management of public finances. With that, we then are also in a process of resolving some of the challenges that we are facing with regard to your national identity system, with regard to the management of public finances itself, as well as with regard to the provision of the technology network that is provided to the department by CETA. And I think when we come back to present our plans for the coming financial year, we will indicate the measures we have taken to address challenges that we have faced with regard to personnel at strategic levels in the department. For example, we are going to increase the capacity we have at OR Tambo International Airport. We are paying great attention to the Cape Town International Airport because the numbers of travelers preferring to land in Cape Town seem to be increasing, and therefore we need to have sufficient capacity. We are also going to report positively on a number of issues when we present our plans for the coming financial year, which will further take us a step forward. And even the issue of the e-Home Affairs program, we are going to solve it during this financial year, and therefore we expect that towards the end of the year, we should finally announce the rollout plan. You will remember that we had hoped to announce it in the previous financial year that's ending in March this year, but that hasn't happened. We should then be in a position, because the negotiations with the banks are ongoing, we're looking at how do we solve that issue. But Chair, without taking much further time, I would then hand it back to the Chair so that the DG can be invited to present the performance. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Minister. It's a revelation of some sort to me, and those things that you are raising are there. As you were mentioning townships in other parts of the country, I was thinking of my province. I know that big townships like Yoganyamazane, there are no home office offices, Epinari, Emahushu, Matsulu, all those big areas, people are forced to travel to cities to get services. I think, members, is something, is an area that we have to come back to it. The issue of banks was going to assist, but to a limited extent, Honourable Minister, because also banks are in towns, most of them, or highly urbanized areas, but they were going to assist a great deal. But I'm just highlighting this one, Honourable Members, that is an area that we need to come back to it and talk about it. You can't sit here and not talk about people who voted us to be here and are not getting our services in their places where they live. E-Home Affairs is a must-have. It's not a nice thing to have. It's a must-have. As the minister was saying, that we all use our Home Affairs not once, not twice, and all of us. It's important that we deal with that. And also the issue of ama border lines. Mpumalanga, minister, Maninga called those areas, starting from Pietermaritzburg, children from Swaziland, they come and get books, go back to their country, they buy from South Africa. Bangena Bapomage, there are no border management there. So those are the areas, but we are waiting for the border management, this BMA bill that is coming. We will make sure that we fast track it from our side, waiting for the NA to finalize it. But I'm just highlighting this one of the home affairs offices, which are not in big townships. It's an area of concern, which we must take up as a committee. Can I then hand over to DG to present a report? DG, what do you have as a, from the Auditor General, qualified? Okay, you'll talk to that. Yeah, but you're doing serious things. There are so many things happening in your department. You've been able to change a lot. It can't be finances that you're not able to solve. For me, looking at what we have from where you are coming from with the department and where you are now, it comes as a small thing to change your financial status. But can I allow you to present your report?
Thanks the Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and as well thanks the Honourable Ministers, made my job easily because I already touched on the main point. So for me, just to provide additional information on what the Minister has said. Chair, as we have indicated that we have been to the committee for many times, I'm not going to repeat what the committee is aware of in terms of our vision, mission and values. And again, I won't repeat what are we supporting as a Department of Home Affairs in terms of government priorities, as we shown under number 3, number 4, number 12, and number 14. Also now, what are the outcomes of the department? I think that is known by the committee. And then, Chair, I'll just touch on this slide, because what is important about it is that is the MTSF for the 5 years of this administration. Now we've covered the 2 years. So it was 2014, 15, 15, 16. So the report now is of the second year. We are left with 3 years. But what was on the MTSF for Home Affairs is that under outcome number 3, BMA established and operational by April 2017, and as well as integrated border management strategy developed and implemented to defend, protect and secure and so well-managed borders. And then is that at the end of the term, 74% or 810 of births captured within 30 days. And then in national identity system operational, but that was the one by 18-19. And then 100% of designated ports of entry equipped with biometric system, and then immigration and refugee bill submitted to Parliament for approval by 2018-19. So when we report, we'll be touching on those. Then with regard to the decent employment to inclusive economic growth, is that Home Affairs must establish 3 DHA premium visa and permit service centers for corporate clients and their families. 85% of critical skills visas adjudicated within 4 weeks for application processed. And then under the efficient and effective development-oriented public services, establishment of DHA contact center. And then with the social and cohesion, it was only added later, but there was nothing now which was put on the MTSF. So that's what we'll be talking about. Having done that, Chair, now is to say how have we performed. As Minister has already indicated that for 15-16 were 36 targets which were planned for the department, of which we have achieved 29 of those, which made 81%, and then not achieved 7, which is 19%. But what is important for us is to show how we're improving from year to year. As a 13-14, we're at 53 percent achieved and 47% not achieved. Then in the 14-15, we achieved 70% and not achieved 30%. And then in the current year, we achieved 81% and not achieved 19%. And where we are looking at is to achieve 100%. But that's how we are growing as an organization. But Jim, I want to share with the committee what we attribute that achievement to, what makes us to be able now to improve. And the important thing is the improved governance, planning, implementation, and monitoring practices. So in the department, we have gone through a process of cascading the DHA strategy throughout the organization. On the 28th of March this year, the minister will be addressing the staff from all the assistant directors up. We call all of them under one roof, and then be able to say, this is the strategy which has been approved for 17-18. These are the targets for your offices. This is what is expected of you. That, it helps a lot, but they're not hearing it from me. They're hearing it from the minister. It does make a change. And then I was saying now, then the planning is more focused on those critical priorities which will ensure maximum impact. As minister has already indicated that we've got only five priorities from the minister, not 100. And then it makes now for us to be easy now to concentrate, because there's only five things which we must do without saying others are not. So I will come back to say what are those priorities and how far we're moving. And then we've developed a clear planning and monitoring guidelines, tools and capacity building in this regard. Improved governance practices such as formation of key performance indicators panel, so that we don't just put things and then there's no way of monitoring them. But what is important for us is this principle of SMART principle. What does that mean is that our targets must be specific, they must be measurable, they must be achievable, they must be realistic and time-bound. But, Chair, we've added two on this SMART principle, that all of our targets are funded, so that we don't get to a situation that we put a target when the time of implementation, then a unit start by saying, well, I didn't have funds. So we make sure that those targets are funded. And then evidence-based, because that's what was killing us in the previous years, that people put a target when we want to say, give me an evidence that we have achieved this, can't produce that. So increasing realization of importance of integrated planning to identify and address key dependencies and risks. So we work as a collective, as a department. And we've got one-on-one feedback consultation sessions with branches and performance information bottom-up approach. So now this year, now Minister is added another on our meeting of the DDGs, that now provincial heads will be starting now to attend those meetings, so that now they're able to account what is happening in their provinces. Because if now headquarters were about policy, then they're about implementation. But at the monitoring, if we leave them out, then we won't be able to achieve this. So we think that is going to be able to help us to go things up. Then what we have used, Chair, is the internal, improve the internal controls, in particular with the internal audit on the performance, to assist us to make sure that when we put this target, people said they've achieved, we've got everything. So the auditor general doesn't come and say, you know, said 81% and then them say something else on the performance, we're doing well. And then we have improved governance arrangements like the audit action plans, and then we looked at the issues of the department's past performance. So we have got a program which amongst the priorities, the five priorities of the minister about the issue of looking at the leadership within the department. We launched at that program called Motia Pillar, to say I'm a leader within my own space of operation, where whatever rank I am. That helped now staff to take the responsibility. As Chair, in the last event, you recall that when we're naming that refugee center. It was not coming from management. We ran a competition in the department and staff at their own levels. And so when we have seen them, they are not at the management level, those staff members. But by now being participating and recognized, they are able to tell us a lot of things which must do them differently, like these issues of uniform and all that. Minister has already touched the issue of the partnership with the banks, which will assist us to increase the footprint. One of the things which we have implemented was this thing of a service charter, outlining service standards. Because what is now for us is that it's not the officials who knows how many days you need to have in order to produce this. The clients themselves, they know that an ID document must take so many days, my birth certificate must take so many, so now they are able to hold us accountable based on our norms and standards, and says, no, I'm not complaining about you. You said you will give me my passport within 13 days, but now I'm on 50 days. What is happening? And then we developed a front office toolkit. That toolkit, when we're changing the working hours, we said we need our staff now to have a 30 minutes every day before they open to say, what were the issues yesterday? How must we deal with it next day? Are the computers working? Is this there before they open? Then every Wednesday, one Wednesday in a month, we open offices after an hour so that now they have a management meeting, because before they were not. And I said, how do you work if now you can't meet? Because a meeting is to say, are we going according to the plans? Are we able to do what we said we're going to do? That is helping us. So now we're also looking at the revised HR structure. So now that is with the Department of DPSA, so that we can see the way in which we are working. And then we've improved this governance and accountability structures. As I've said now, we start to have monthly meetings. And we first start with the daily meetings, weekly, monthly, and who attends and all that. That has helped us and in terms of these SOPs. Then the issue of the live capture, which has been rolled out to other offices, has helped us now to achieve more on the smart card, because a live capture helps us to remove these issues of fraud, because it's becoming more paperless. So it's what we've implemented now at Desmond Tutu Refugee Center, is a live capture which has started with it at Civics, and then now we're taking it now to the Refugee Center. A learning academy, which is within HR, is helping us, but they've got now dedicated a focus in where they will train. For instance, now last year, they were more on this issue of how we can train our inspectorate officers and as well as courses around management. And then the issue of upgrades at the Central IT Processing Center helped us now to get some stable issues, that though the networks are still a challenge. We've improved now on the permitting and visa issuance, and that has helped us to work together with the VFS, so that now the process of receiving the applications now is tight and we don't get applications get lost. And we have implemented the biometrics at our four international airports, which is OTA, Cape Town, Kinshasa, and Lanseria. That is helping us now that people, when they come to the country now, they know that they were taking their fingerprints. Because once we do that, it works as a deterrent, even on crime issues. Because now they know that if the police can go to the crime scene and were involved in that, they pick that fingerprint, they will come now to Home Affairs to run against our database, and we'll be able to say it is so and so, like what we're doing with the nationals. Because the nationals, the first thing which the police wants to get there is the fingerprints in the crime scene. But again, there was this gap, but it's something which we are continuing to roll. As in the MTSF said, all by end of 2019, all the ports of entry must have this. As Minister, as I said, that is just to split to say how many we've achieved under administration, under civics and immigration. So, Chair, I want to be more just dealing with what we have not achieved rather than repeating what has been achieved. So I will skip those slides with the achieved. Well, Chair, I will take now just highlight these programs, in particular civics and immigration, that since the launch of the smart card in 2013, the number of offices now by end of the last financial year were 178 throughout the country. And as we said, we've signed now that MOU with the banks. What we're working on now is the actual rollout. We are already now operating in 12 banks throughout, in fact, in Gauteng, and only one in the Western Cape, but we're in the process of increasing that. With the smart card project, yes, we did achieve more than our target, which was 2.2. And then again, the first issue IDs within 54 working days. So, Chair, there is where it is still a manual green ID book. So we still have it, but we'll tell what we are looking at going forward, and as well as the reissues. Chair, the interesting thing now we are seeing there with this project of registering kids within 30 days, it also have another effect that now we are seeing the reduction now on the late registration of birth, but it's still not at a level which we want. But at least now it's not growing, it is declining, as now we are increasing now on our registration within 30 days. And then with the immigration services, Chair, now our refugee amendment bill, another team today is sitting in the portfolio committee now to finalize the refugee amendment bill, which is in front of the portfolio committee. And now we've seen the improvements which have implemented now in the that Maraba State has been turned now, Desmond, to a refugee reception center. The minister was also touching on when he comes back now in the budget speech, he will direct now what we're going to be doing from that refugee center. And then we have improved, as I said now, our movement control system in this. And it was very interesting, Chair, that during this past festive, no complaints which we have received now around tourism. That matter now has been sorted, as we no longer get those within the media. But the minister has indicated again there is something which we'll be doing to sustain what we have done during this festive season. And as a department, we really believe that we can only resolve our issues through modernization. When permitting was on a manual, was run in the provinces, and then we were really in trouble. But now we've automated now that process, so things now are really improving on that side. Chair, we implemented, as we have done, the Zimbabwe Special Dispensation. We started with the Lesotho Special Dispensation to try and regularize people who are in our country illegally. So that we have started in the 2015, though we completed it in the December 2016. ZSP, we were now just going back to renew those applications. So the number was about 197,000. And then now when we go back to those people, still about 99% are still here in our country with those permits. Then around immigration, as I've said that now we did, now going to the countries abroad to say, yes, we're taking the fingerprints once they are at the airport, but we want to go and take those fingerprints at the country of origin so that if there are issues, we deal with you when you are there, not when we're already at the port. And as I've said now, then one of the issues now which we have seen is us now to be able to do these verification processes around the permanent residence. And then we've looked now at the strategy for refugees when they are resettling in our country, what we can do with it. And then we have conducted a borderline community survey. Last year, we did launch at City Lamolomo, informal crossing, where the population, there is about 3,000, I think 1,200 and 1,800 on the other side, and the chief is uncle, the one on the other side. So there are one people. So for them not to always go there with their passport and all that, so what we have taken their fingerprints as a community, so when they cross, they put their fingerprint and we know about, oh, you are a member of this community and they've got a 48 hours. And then, so it's, that is working well, but then it was a pilot, we'll be seeing how do we take it forward. The issue of the green paper on international migration was already approved by the minister, implemented in the point now of finalizing the white paper, and then our participation on the Operation Fiela during the time of what happened in 2015. And so now, as Minister said, we still continue now to face some challenges in terms of our appeals, that is CRA and RAP, to deal with issues of the appeals. The issue of budget constraints is still a problem, and how we deal with the issues of deportation. So, Minister is talking now about the five priorities. So what we're putting here is that under that complete the modernization program, there are a lot of things which were, but the ultimate which we want to see in the 2019 is a integrated digital systems and re-engineered business process managed and protected by the required complement of effective professionals. So by 2019, we want to see Home Affairs in all fronts. Paperless systems which are integrated. If I cross the border as an asylum seeker, we capture, as a visitor first, we capture your fingerprints because you are coming to a country as a visitor. And then tomorrow you want to go to our refugee reception center now as an asylum. And it says, no, we can pick you for everyone in one rider. So that's what we are looking at with this system. Even the issue of traveling of the children, that's why now the system already, if now you come to our country traveling with one child, when you leave, we're expecting you to go back with that one child. But you can't come now with the two, because the system is able to say, no, but when we are coming here, we had one, where do we get now the second one? So that's what we are looking at it now going forward. Then the issue of establishment of PMA, by that time, we really want that the founding legislation, as we are talking about, and the model and basic structures, people, processes, and systems in place, so it must be fully operational by that time. Then the other major issue was this matter of the upgrade of the ports of entry. In that, the minister identified for us six key land ports. Because if you look at the infrastructure at the airports, is a little bit okay. And then also in the maritime, because TNPA is taking that responsibility. But the land ports currently are under the Department of Public Works. They will only move into the Border Management Authority. So for now, minister identified enough this process. Why can't we upgrade them? Whether at the time they will be transferred to the PMA. So now those are Beitbridge, Libombo, Kopfontein, Maseru, Fixback, and Oshoek. So it's working now. So we're saying that at that time we want now to see a new model for these ports of entry, because they are also commercial, so they must promote trade and economic development in the country. And the issue of the comprehensive review of immigration policy, Chair, we've moved a lot on this one. We've done now the green paper, but it's going to be looking at a really new paradigm shift in managing international migration in the country. So by that time, we'll have now the new Immigration Act and as well as the Refugee Act. Then the last one is this improved client experience through leadership. So this matter is in our radar to make sure that we want Home Affairs where clients must really feel the services which we are giving them. Because we still say, yes, we can have systems improved and everything, but Home Affairs services have to interact with that staff. So we want to have a cadre which is able to understand what it means to service people. In particular, that Home Affairs services, you can't get them anywhere else. If you don't get a death certificate in Home Affairs, you can't go to any other place and say, I must go and get it. So our staff must have that level of understanding. Having said that, I'm not going to repeat this one because this one is already the MTSF. So let me now go exactly of what we have achieved. As I was indicating to you that now I won't be taking time on what we have achieved. I'm going to be dealing only with those targets which we didn't achieve, and we have said what we are doing with it. So we wanted to engage on that NIS. So that NIS, as I'm saying, we wanted to get it into the phases. So the first block for us was for the this automated finger identification system, which we wanted to implement. So there were delays on it in terms of the tender and all that. So we could not achieve that. But we are closing now at that tender. So we are making sure that in the next year we'll be able to implement this AFIS. So I will skip all those share which we have achieved. As I said, I will deal with the only ones which have not been achieved. So that was on the administration was that one target. Then on civics, is this target chair of the registration of birth within 30 days. I want to explain this one even per provinces, that we could not achieve this registration of birth within 30. But let me go to explain based per province. So we split first this target per province. So Eastern Cape was expected to register 94,000, and then Free State and all that up to that. So you can see about that 750 split per province. Yes, if you look, the province which was a little bit lower was the Eastern Cape at 89%, but others at the range of 90-something percent. So in total, we've achieved 94% of that. So there are still challenges on this thing of registration of birth within 30 days. One of those, firstly, is that the system also says that a mother must have an ID document when he goes to the hospital. But we know that at times it is a rush, and then the mother didn't bring that ID book. Then that one we have missed. So on these processes, Minister was talking to us now yesterday to say, hey, our system of verification, if now I go to NPR, you must remember your ID number. But you don't put a finger and then the system pops out what is your ID number is. So it's something which you want to look at it, because if now we can just do that, it can also help us so that even if the mother has forgotten about the ID book, at least the finger will always be there, and then if you can test and then be able to do that. So those are the reasons, some of the reasons made us not to do that. Yes, there's still these issues of naming the child and all that, but what we are doing on this in this regard, we have commissioned a study through DPME to go and do an evaluation why people are not registering kids within 30 days. So that we don't use assumptions. We get a study, so which they will be finalizing that, and then based on that study, then I will be able now to say how we can take this process going forward. But at the same time, Chair, we are saying, though we are not, we are still at 94%, but when we started this, registration of kids was not a matter, but at least now people are understanding that they have to register. But what is interesting with it, and another thing, actually, we've changed now. We no longer have an abridged. Now we've got a birth certificate, which now is just printed on the spot. So, but you can see how we've been climbing the ladder. We're starting around 500,000, but now at least we're going towards 700. But we know, according to State South Africa, that about 1 million births happening in a year. So that's where we want to get into it. Though the MTSF is still saying by 2019 we must register 810. So what is interesting is this one, get at the slide, to see that, but how many beds now are registered after 31 days? You see, but it was starting at about 586 beds registered after 31 days. But now the beds now which are registered after 31 days is 297. So you can see that based on what State South Africa is saying is correct, that we register 750, which is our target, and then are there still 297 outside. So if now we can push that 297 within the 30 days then can help. But again, these strategies which we're working on is to see how we can connect our systems with the Department of Health, because a lot of births are happening in a hospital. Those are still births at home, but if we can be able now to deal with that, then we can be able to. So the births are still, as I'm saying now, though they are dropping, births, because we'll see that in 10-11 we have about 1.2 million births per annum, but now we're at 1.04. So births are also coming down, but we want to register that number. So that is the issue. But again, that's why I'm saying we need to work with health now to make sure that our numbers are corresponding with theirs. But we can do that through that integration of systems. That's why now we're talking about that NIS. So as I said, now what we've achieved, I will skip that. Like the smart card, we're still doing well in terms of the numbers, even per province. But the target which we have chased, that we estimated that we've got about 38 million people who are in possession of a green ID book. So if now we're achieving at a 2 million, it's a small dent. That's why the minister now is talking about these rural offices. Because if now we don't have those offices, people, in fact, the smart card is for free for the young and 60 and above. But that does not encourage them if there is no office. It's not the issue that they have to pay, but if there is no access, they will sit and not and not and not. So though we are having that number, but it still means nothing as towards the target which we have to have for the population. The OK Wasena is also improving, because, I mean, we started with about 100, and then now we're at about 2.3 million now, but for next year we'll come with a better target. So under civics, and the other one which is important for us is this issue of the reissues, that we want that number to drop. So, but again, now we are going to be talking about the strategy now of this green ID book. Because if now we're still producing about 506,000 green ID books, it means that they are adding now in that 38 million. So we need to have a way to stop the green ID book, and we know that we are dealing with that population. But Minister will announce the processes in the next budget speech of how to deal with this. Let's go to immigration now, Chair. On immigration, what we did not achieve was this issue of the refugee travel documents, because this process, Chair, is still manual, that people are submitting manual documents and all that. So this year, we are finalizing that process, and the minister will make an announcement again during the budget speech to say how now going forward we're going to be dealing with the issue of the refugee and the smart card for refugees. But this was because of a manual process. PMA, Chair, this PMA is going to come here, the legislation. There were delays, Chair, with this. One of those was for us, now that at NEDLAC, because that bill, we thought that it just comes straight to Parliament and then being processed. And we have to still take some time within the NEDLAC process, which those processes now have been finalized and then was submitted now to the National Assembly. So the portfolio committee is about to finalize it. That's why I get the minister during the last event, he was saying that he wants the NCOP and as well as the Parliament to fast track this issue of a PMA. And Chair, it is really, really a concern to us, because a lot of challenges in terms of the porous borders will be resolved through this PMA. And the issues which we are talking about, that we can have those centers as well, good, but if our borders are porous, then it's not going to take us anywhere. Then that strategy was dependent on that, so anything linked to PMA, that's what nightmare does not to move with it. Then the rollout of other priority points, we have taken time to hear now in terms of the strategy, that's what was the delay, but now in the following year, we'll be able now to implement. In the next year, we've targeted a lot of points which will be improving next year, in addition to the six. Permanent residence. Chair, the permanent residence is still an issue for us, but we have now really looked at this to split the issue of permanent residence for skills, critical skills, than the permanent residence for relatives and all that. Because it takes time now to do those evaluation processes. So now we want to separate that, and then we'll be able now to achieve this target. Chair, then going to the provinces, I just want to highlight some of the things which they are dealing with it. So as I was saying now, the beds we have, but they also look at this issue of the late registration of beds. So we really wanted to push now how we do fast this thing. So we have decentralized that function per province. So they've got a target of now they must go and do these outreach campaigns to the communities and say, register your child within 30 days and all that. So that's what they are assisting us. So they've achieved that. And the other chair, which the minister has already touched on it in terms of our capacity. Yes, on in the law, it is clear what employers must do and what they must not do. The issue that people must appoint 60% of South Africans in their businesses is there. But what is lacking in Home Affairs is the capacity to enforce that. So though the numbers were still very low on what we have given them, but because of the capacity, we're not able to achieve that. So it's something which we really want to get some resources in order for us to be able to deal with this. But at the level we are, we're looking at about 49 in the Eastern Cape, 47. And you think about it to say it's very, very low. It's not even passing the 100. But we know that the number of our inspectorate throughout the country is about 750. And now, Minister, I was even comparing, because we used to compare it with the City of London. Now we're comparing now with OR Tambo. That OR Tambo as an airport has got, Minister, about 850 police officers. OR Tambo as an airport from police. But Home Affairs has got a 750 inspectorate officers across the country. So police were telling us that last year there were about 5,000 new recruits for police, 5,000. But Home Affairs, if you get something, will be 20 or whatever. So you can't compare that also. That is a danger which we are sitting with. It is something which we have to do. Then this one, Chair, is just that now those people who are now transgressing the legislation, these ones are only people now who comes to us. It's not that we go for them. When they come to the airport, and then now we put a passport, and then it will say we have overstayed, and then now based on that, we'll give you that. So it's not that we are achieving because we go for them. It's them who comes to us. So it's in reverse, whereas we want us to go to them. But these ones, we wait for them to come to us when they have to go back. But it's that capacity which we are talking about. And even these undetected, undocumented foreigners deported within 30 days. As I'm saying, if now through those, you can see the numbers again, they mean nothing. Though we're saying they achieve it. But if now we say Eastern Cape has managed to get 172 people for 12 months, we can say, yes, they've achieved that number, but how many they could not be able to pick it up. So that's what we're interested, more than this. And then now those ones, now which we transfer now to Lindela, once they manage to get these people, we want to take them to Lindela within 20 days so that we can comply with the law. But Eastern Cape and Gauteng managed only 98%. Others were able to send those people through that. But even in terms of numbers, it's only 19,289 in total of those people which were able to detect throughout the year. Whereas as a country, we received about 15 million people coming through the country in the year. And then cases of fraudulent marriages, even this one, Chair, we want to do, what we're trying to explain is that in the vision of the department, these things are in the radar, but the issue is the capacity to deal with them. So we know that there are fraudulent marriages, so we want the provinces to look at them, but these things, you work on them through inspectorate. Those people, they come and say, this is my partner, we've got this and that. So if now you can have a capacity of inspectorate, you must go to those houses and say, you said you are marrying this South African as this foreign national, but we're not staying together. We can be able to get that. But what we will find is only these numbers are very low. Because we couldn't put high numbers based on the capacity we have. So they're able to deal with those fraudulent marriages, but the numbers are very, so only 295 in the whole year they managed to do. But we know that these fraudulent marriages are far above than that number. So I think this is an important slide in terms of which Minister has already touched on it. What are these challenges and what do we think we need to deal with them? So we still says it is still a challenge to have an effective and efficient management of asylum seeker and refugee environment, including the relocation of refugee centers close to the borderlines and management of economic migrants. That is still a challenge. But the answer which we have here is really bullet number 3, that we need to finalize the development of white paper on international migration. Because there are a lot of, I think, Chair, you attended one of the sessions where which we have in the workshop, I think you were there, dealing with this thing to say we don't want to prescribe as a department, but we want to get the views from the people who can give the data. So it got a lot of chapters. One, there's one about the issue of this asylum seeker management, in particular the issue of looking at a SADC visa to say by closing the borders, it won't help us just building the walls, but we need to have a system of how to regularize this. This morning, I was watching people are coming from Morocco crossing a borderline which is built up to that, but they were so excited that they were able to cross through that wall without big the way building it. So that does not help. What it helps is to come with the regulatory framework. Then the issue of the border management and provision of acceptable port infrastructure, as I've said, is the issue of this border management, which we need to deal with it, and the 6 ports of entry. Then the issue of historical underfunding and resourcing of DHA. On Wednesday, Minister directed the department to come up with the repositioning of DHA, because now DHA now is not allocated in the cluster which it's supposed to be. Now we're under administrative cluster, whereas we're supposed to be under JCPS. So now Home Affairs is not taken as a department which deals with the security issues. So now we went to the cabinet and then they gave an approval for us to develop that position paper. Now on Thursday, we'll be presenting now to the JCPS cluster cabinet committee to deal with this. So we'll say if that can happen, maybe the funding now will talk to what is our responsibilities. Minister mentioned this issue of dependence in time, but in particular with the networks. So we still have an issue with this. So where we're looking at is an approach that is Home Affairs cannot be exempted on these issues to belong to go through the CETA and all that. I know that even today there's a meeting, no, it's tomorrow, between the Minister and Minister of Telecommunications to look at what can we deal with this. Because when those offices are offline, people, they think that is Home Affairs. And what is offline is the network connecting that office back to our back office. If that system is down, then people, they don't know anything else except they are looking at us and says, yes, we are happy with your improvements which you have, but if they don't work, even on the day when we are launching that, we were crossing fingers like this. We were, hey, my president mustn't go to that appointment machine and we put a finger and it does not work because the network is not connected. So everything is dependent on the network. Yes, we're working on this issue of non-integration system. As we said, now we're moving on that NIS. Once we achieve that, then get a specialist. We always compare ourselves that SARS has got about 800 IT people. But SARS has got 15,000 staff members, them operating on about I think offices of SARS throughout the country, there are about 100. But Home Affairs has got 411 offices. Civics, we've got 72 ports of entry. We've got refugees, 5 refugee centers, although the 2 are trying to close. Then we've got offices abroad. I was telling Minister yesterday that to post one person abroad, it cost us about R1 million. But if now we were having this system, then we do adjudication at home. People apply online and we adjudicate at home and we send them electronically. We'll save that money. But what you need is those specialists. Because if now we do that, and when the systems are down, we don't have people to look after that. And then the issue of lack of records management, we started a process, Minister, it was this year, with the State South Africa. We have got a program where they are digitizing our documents. But unfortunately, we've got only 10 million to do that. So we are only digitizing about 5,000 records per annum, whereas Home Affairs has got over 200 million documents which are sitting there on paper. So, but we said with the minister, no, it's good just to start something so that we can demonstrate that if we do this, this is where we can go. So that's why the funding of the Department of Home Affairs is really an important aspect, because everybody is, in fact, we are not allowed for us to destroy any document for any person, because I can't say a grandchildren cannot come back to Home Affairs and say, hey man, we want to know about our grandmother or grandfather, what happened. You can't say we don't have that record. It must be there. So we need to digitize those documents, but the money we have is just not even a drop in an ocean, something I cannot imagine. Then the issue of the capacity in areas like inspectorate, legal services, we've already talked about, but get the business case will deal with that. Fight against unlawful activities. We are having, yes, we have a branch, counter corruption, but it's also not resourced at the level which we want, but we do see some positive aspects around that. At least in the department, there is that fear that, hey, if I do this thing, I can get caught, and then I need to deal with it. We need to still improve Ghana issues of governance, and then ensuring that the staff are properly trained, caring. That is my dear pillar project, which we are talking about. Organizational structure, we have done that. Though we are still dealing with the repositioning, we have submitted now to DPSA. We are waiting for their approval for that. So, I think now I'll finish with the performance information. I want to come to the area which you were mentioning, this financial information. The minister has also touched on it. Chair, we are saying it. After 2013-14, I remember, Chair, we had a disclaimer, we're in this committee even at that time. So after that, we improved on that. We had a qualification. But what is cutting across here is still this departmental revenue between us and DICO. That's what we are sitting with it. So you will see now that in the qualification of 2015-16, is still now we've cleaned everything except now the issues which are linked with the departmental revenue. Even now on tomorrow, we are going to the Committee of International Relations where they are looking at a bill for DICO for managing of the foreign service. So we are going there with a proposal that why DICO can't just collect this revenue abroad, deposit on the National Revenue Fund, which is what has happened now last year. And then if there is, and then they are counted in their books, not in our books. But that's where is a problem, that now someone collects and do this, but if there is an error and an omission, is a responsibility of another department. So that's what we are doing. So here we're just explaining about what is still left now, is that as a department, we did amend our Immigration Act. We no longer now impose fines to people who are in our country and they overstate. Now what we do, we declare you as undesirable and then you won't come to this country for another period of 5 years. So that has already been changed, and so that account is in the process of being closed immigration control accounts. That's why now Minister was saying, now this year, which is 16-17, those accounts are no longer there. They've been now closed. So if now Auditor General can, we think they will agree now with us, because the old accounts now have been closed, but in the year, they were still operational. And then here we're explaining that to deal with this, Treasury has been giving us some departures to say, no, Home Affairs, don't do this. This is a departure which we have agreed about it. But in the year now, there was a change where now Auditor General and Treasury agreed that hey, these departures are no more now standing. So you must comply fully with the movement, with a modified cash standard, even if what are your legacy issues we have. That's where now for us, they said we must have what we called an agent principal agreement between Home Affairs and DICO, that as we are a principal and DICO is an agent, is they will collect that revenue, deposit it in the revenue account, but if there is an error or an omission when DICO has made a mistake, it comes to us. We cannot say, no, we're not responsible for that, collecting that revenue on our behalf. That's a challenge which we're sitting with it. So what we're trying to explain here is that what were directives which Treasury has been giving to us together with the Auditor General, which we complied with. You'll see others were even after the 10th of June, when we have already submitted the financial statements by 31st of May. So we have to follow all those directives up to there when we submitted the financial statements at the end based on that. But what is important is to say, you know, how we're going to deal with this. One of the expenditure, that one was already resolved. What we did, we transferred the baseline amount to DICO, so we no longer pay now for staff which is posted abroad. That is managed by DICO, not by us. So what is left is only the revenue part. In terms of the budget, Chair, we have spent our budget. We didn't have an unauthorized expenditure. We spent according to our allocation for this year. In all the years, we don't have that. And then this was still an allocation based on the compensation goods and services, so we don't have an unauthorized expenditure. Then this is a split per provinces. They spend their budget as we manage it every month. Then, you know, what is the way forward? The way forward for us now is to really continue with this issue of the national identity system. So we want to achieve this by the end of this term. And then the issue of the BMA is key to us, that we push for this. And we'll be focusing on finalizing this issue of the international migration white paper to come up with those things. And then they will want to develop and implement the business case to reposition DHA. And we'll continue with this program of Metapila initiative to make sure that our staff at all levels, they understand how they must deal with their customers. And we still want to continue to improve our DHA contact center. What contact center now means is that where people now they call if they've got queries, that system now is running on top of our system. So a person that is able to say your passport is at this level, your smart card is at this level and all that. So we want to continue with that and improve our governance and administration practices. And the bullet number before last is an important one, sir. We really want to work towards this discontinuation of the Green ID book. As I was saying that Minister Nain during the budget speech will touch on this, what we're going to be doing as a department to achieve that. If now we are still at a range of about, people might have a smart card, now about 6 million in total, as against the 38 million. Only with 178 offices. We don't want a program of 10 years. It must be shorter, so that's what we do with it. We will continue with the issue of fight against fraud and corruption in the department. Then, you know, with the DICO, as we said, that we are just to close now those accounts and make sure that we comply. Then what was the proposal which we were taking even in that meeting is to say, why DICO can't just collect this revenue and deposit it and then be accountable for? If that can't be done through that, maybe there's another process which is through a presidential proclamation to transfer that function to DICO. If we can do that, Chair, we are saying next year will be, when I say next, I mean this year, 16, 17, will be able now to have a better report than what we have. Thank you very much, Chair. I was trying to rush a report for a year. But as I was saying, I was just confirming on what the Minister has already said. Thanks.
Minister, do you want to add something? You're fine. All members, here's a report from the department. Can we engage with the report? I'll start from the beginning. Oramaburu. Until here. I'm starting at the beginning there. Yeah, with you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the comprehensive report. I'd first like to really commend the Department of Home Affairs on the work they have done so far. There will always be challenges. And I am really hoping that in a time to come, Home Affairs will be able to reach the 100% in all of their targets. My only concern is that it seems like we are not servicing the majority as well as we should. And the only thing I see here is the problem of budget. And I feel that an appeal needs to be made on behalf of the Department of Home Affairs that the budget should be reviewed so that it is given enough budget so that they are able to serve in a way that they would wish to, because it is one of the departments that I think that they take their work seriously. I also believe that education is very important in our community. I know that it is said that, like things of time frames on when people to expect their IDs and their passports to be delivered and all that. My concern is, what about the elderly people? What about those who cannot read? What can be done for those people to be able to be on the same page, to have the information that those who are able to read themselves have? I am thinking... I know that budgets are a serious constraint here, but I think education is very important because we're still sitting with people who do not know how to access documents that are necessary. We're still sitting with children at schools who do not have their birth certificates that are chased out from schools because of that. And I feel that it is our responsibility that we make sure that those things are kept, whether a child is of the origin is South African or not, but we all know that education is everyone's right. So we should come up with plans, we should come out with systems in place to make sure that we avoid situations where children are chased out of schools because they do not have birth certificates. What can be done? Can the Department of Home Affairs come up with ways of saying this is what we can do and this is what we expect the Parliament and to help us with so that we keep these things from happening? My other issue is with the people that come into the country who are said to have critical skills. I know that these people need documents to come into the country, but we still have people who are working in international businesses or corporates with documents that have expired, work permits that have expired. What is it that, is there a way from the Department of Home Affairs that they can follow up and make sure that those people in those businesses, especially the international ones in this country, what can be done to make sure that those people do not work with expired work permits and documents? Lastly, Chair, the Learning Academy, I just want to understand It's not lastly. I have another last point. I just want to understand the Learning Academy. Who benefits from it? What kind of, I would call them courses or programs that are in this Learning Academy that are offered to the employees and officials of the Home Affairs Department? The front office toolkit, I feel it is a very good idea, but we all know that within all these processes that we put in place, they are those who do not comply. They are those who do not do what is said on paper. Have you experienced such issues in your department, in your offices, and how do you deal with employees who do not comply with this, so that it is a good toolkit? If it is followed to the latter, I think that it will really improve the services in the Home Affairs Department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Pambos Bukwane.
First of all, Minister Sudan, on your self-establishment, I see you've got a high domination of men to women, and I want to know how are you addressing your gender equality in terms of bringing equality in that space. In conjunction with that, how have you addressed on your self-establishment skills? The employment of 2% of people with disabilities can be an outline. This has been my ongoing question for the previous, and people that may not agree with me, my question is, what I want to know to gauge in order to comply to the 2%, how far as a department. That's my question on that establishment. Secondly, Minister, on the corruption, which I had you speaking on TV, part of the things that are hindering your execution in this department. How are you dealing with the officials accepting money from foreigners? We have heard this from police when we were on oversight with Bybridge. They confirmed that they do accept money as a form of bribe. How are you dealing with that? Can you give us an untapped the details on that corruption done by officials? How have been the convictions? How far are they? And where can we, as a committee, help you in terms of the department that this conviction not going so far? On your thoughts of NC, Melissa, there continues to be a problem of drugs coming into this country at the port of NC. Also, surely because of the drugs that are coming, this is also an extension to the corruption that is happening. What have been your efforts together with social development in trying to combat this? Give us a detailed information on the strategy that is instilled or you've introduced in this regard, and how far has been your your winning in this. Honorable Chairperson, further to that, I must say, Minister, on your outline 14 outcomes of the government by your department, the fourth one, which speaks to the decent employment through increasing economic growth, I would like to outline the problem we have presently with the youth and unemployment. And I suppose you would love to see them participating in the economic growth by getting them employed. Can you give us a detailed comprehensive report on that regard? How far have you tried to meet this? It is also with regard to the alignment of the NDP in this regard. The churches of personnel, people could have health problems. How many people have been employed in terms of the youth, the race, outline, so that we can do this at least in reaching out to the needs as per again the NDP. Coming to the best of the state, I'd like to outline, Minister, that previously it has been picked up that the best of the state has affected the economy of the country and was confirmed by Minister Garisano from his speech in the NCAC when we were debating. What have you changed in that regard to try and meet up with the economy of the country that is not declined as compromising of being the state? So have you changed anything from the previous thing? Strategies that were in place that we have pleaded and begged that can they be changed because they are affecting the economy of the country. There's nothing that's been said in that. I have outlined that on the past conditions that were on TV where officials were arrested on the corruption, can we also have the person that is very important for it? Probably even if you don't have them now, you can send them to. Either of them. Because sometimes Minister is here and most of the time all the time system is also here because sometimes Minister caught up in the Wednesday.
I mean the name. Are you Mkosela referring to the DJ?
DJ.
Oh, okay.
Honorable Chair, you remember when we were at the Mandela that had the same thing. One of the most concerning calls that were of concern to us was the clinic that was there and dealing mainly with patients with MDR and HIV positive patients. And we had pleaded to the department to have collaborative efforts and to deal with the matter. The space was a problem there, bearing in mind that TB is one of the things that anyway and another person. What has been done since our last meeting, and I know it was raised to the beginning. The smart card. DG, with regard to the smart card, this is my suggestion. Maybe if we can work with time frames that as a country we want people by this time to have the ID. Working towards that we will achieve our goal is quite a small number of citizens of South Africa who have been smart card. And for me, having had it in 4 days' time, I just applied it, but in 4 days' time I have got it. It is the most convenient card ever. You can slip it in your pocket, it doesn't occupy too much space. It's so convenient, it's very quick to get. I mean, I call you, Chairperson, and what you said, so much has been achieved in terms of what has been done previously up to date now in terms of the use of the Department of Home Affairs. There is containment and quick response, and I'm one person who works very closely with Ulysses Simon, with Ulysses up and down, people from Victoria. He gets spontaneous, quick responses. Even let's talk about the passport. Passport took 3 days for me to get passport. ID manual is very convenient. And if you go to the ID, I don't only see it as a convenient to get into the bank or whatever, but in terms of the fraud that comes with the EI, it is eliminating in terms of fraud. It's quite different from the ID, the need for card. So, with all the tightening, fraud that comes in is the most convenient thing. And I think if you can just dig in, if you make a template, but about Mabeba and I am coming by end of October, end of September, and then going, you know, just work in a vacuum, which people must get it, it's not a big problem, a big issue, raise their table. But if you put it in 2010 things, I'm sorry, I think our target. I thank you.
Honorable Hartin.
Thank you, Chair. I must say that the constraints on the department as highlighted here today, specifically with comparison with the SAPS, is really impressive, and I didn't really realize that that was the situation. And with that in mind, I would just like to get an understanding of two things. Firstly, visa applications that must be handled with the limited resources in the department. Now, I think that has brought the visa applications for people from other countries visiting our country really into the spotlight. What happened on the 13th of December when a decision was announced that people from New Zealand citizens visiting South Africa then needed a visa to visit South Africa from January. This is an, let's call it, the retaliation of the New Zealand decision to apply that to South Africans visiting New Zealand. Now, my question would be, was this properly researched, the impact of this decision and other similar decisions, and also in line with arrangements with other countries where some of the countries require South African visas while visits from citizens of that country to South Africa do not necessarily in all cases require visas. Now, if we just compare the two situations, if you want to, South African wants to visit New Zealand, you can apply online for a visa. You don't have to travel to Cape Town, Johannesburg, or any other place to get a visa. Now, our knee-jerk, in my opinion, reaction to that decision of New Zealand now requires every South African or every New Zealander who wishes to visit South Africa having to travel to Wellington, to the SA High Commission in Wellington. Now, the distance from Auckland, the economic hub of New Zealand, to Wellington is about 800 kilometers, 700 kilometers. It's a 1,400 there and back trip to visit South Africa. And that is not really in line with the policy stated by even the minister, that we want to enhance economic relations with those countries. If it was on a same basis, reciprocal approach, then if we had an online system, then I think it would be totally justified. But in the circumstances where we are lagging behind in the technology, I would like to know and it's now been in place for just over a month, what are the implications for people coming to visit South Africa, and also about the impact on the economic relations between the two countries. Then similarly, also in line with the restrictions on HR in the department. I would like to know and get an understanding where a company wanting to establish a port of entry and is prepared to pay officials from the department, point them, carry their full salary without any cost for the department. Why would such an application meet with the disapproval, even the resistance from the department? Thank you.
I did not get.
I did not get
the last question. A private company.
I'm specifically referring to Fireblade's application, which suddenly became very problematic after the relationship between the Guptas and the owners of Fireblade soured.
Thank you.
enough money for them to roll out the project. Even in areas where there's challenges, you can actually analyze and see that this challenge is as a result of the government. There isn't enough budget to do. Issues related to border issues. Would you be using a lot of money at the department in the proper management of the border? The repatriating, deportation are necessary to make an origin point when finalizing the situation and actually implementing this policy. The issues that were raised in your presentation, which is raised by the Auditor General, are issues that you create. I want to believe that there is an alignment between the set target and the budget. But in program 3, for example, we have 60% of the budget, but the budget will be used in 80%. So, to me, it doesn't happen. We have achieved 81% of the target, but we have used 100% of the budget. One is this explanation of it to how does it happen? Because my reason for the question is if you achieve 80, then the budget will be 80, because the correlation between target and the budget. So I keep clarity in that regard. And in areas, chapters that are not going to be very long, where we have not achieved, like in the office, registration of birth, and immigration and refugee travel documents, DNA, and so on and so on. These are areas that they are encouraging you to hire audience to address, and also the issues raised by the Auditor General with a view to progressing towards a clean audit. Because as a committee, you would love to see a deal when the department is working. I heard the issues that are raised with respect to their core relationship with yourself and the collection and so on that is affecting your audit outcome. But those are the issues that you need to take into account and correct as quickly as possible as I said earlier. Your challenges, most of your challenges are not issues that you can resolve on your own. They are actually interdependent. And with the support of the community, I think we are going to get there. Thank you for the support. I think the chapter that I think is one of the questions that was very good. But we are looking forward to progressing to a stage where all the South Africans are going to be good. Thank you very much, Minister, for the leadership that you are providing. There is a total overhaul in over-processing. See, when you enter the audit, the turnaround time for the determination, there is. You are doing very well, but you are not saying that you have reached perfection. You are doing very well.
Well, I'm telling you guys, I've been an old man. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm so shy, out of record. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. Chairperson, I want to congratulate the Department of Home Affairs for the good work that they are doing to transform the lives of our people. Generally, Chairperson, the challenge here is budget. They are doing whatever they can with the little that they have, but still, they can't manage. Let me join Honorable Zwane on the issue of border management, because according to me, it's one other area where, even if we want, with the little that we have, we'll never sustain that program. It will always be a problem. It will stay with us. It's an issue that needs us as a department to interrelate, to come together, to see what we can do. Chairperson, this issue of migration is not only affecting us in terms of movement of people or space. Let me give you a story. I met this woman at the airport. The woman wanted to go to Louis Trichardt. Then I wanted to know, because she was not a South African citizen, what was the problem. The problem was her brother was here in South Africa. The brother passed on. The challenge was, how do they take the body from South Africa to Congo? They didn't have the money to take the body to Congo. What was supposed to happen was for them to do a ritual and bury the brother in South Africa. You can see our cemeteries are also affected because of this thing. We need to come together and to do what is relevant. We can talk about overtime. It can't happen because we don't have money. We can talk about infrastructure. According to your systems, it's not easy. It will take some time. It needs the technicians. It needs specialists. It needs everybody. It's the issue of money. But let me ask this question. How long does it take one to get a death certificate? Let me say late registration of death. Because there is this problem that, more especially in the rural areas, children die as early as 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. Some bury them in their homes or their crawls. Then there's no certificate. And you find the mother was receiving a grant from SASSA. What are the impact? Because this mother will continuously get this grant, whereas the child is no longer there. How does it take? Because we need to correct this things at the end of the day. I'm sitting with this kind of a case, but at least I've tried to phone your officials in practice here to assist this woman, but I just wanted to get it from you so that in the future, if it happens, I'm able to respond. Then, to change your identity also, there are people who are sitting with problems of identity. I am Sapanokhwedi Mampuru, but you find when my ID comes, I am Kathy Dlamini. It's a problem. I am Sapanokhwedi Mampuru. I do everything. But when the ID comes, my date of birth is correctly captured, but the picture in the ID is mine, but the names are not mine. I've made a submission at your offices, Minister, just here in Parliament. There is this person who is sitting with this kind of a challenge. Date of birth is correct. The picture is correct, but the names doesn't belong, they belong to another person. I have since submitted this thing in 2014. I don't know what must do. Can you assist in order to assist other people in the future? But nonetheless, we do appreciate. Keep on doing what is right for you. We hope maybe one day we'll be able to assist for you to get a better piece of the budget so that you execute as expected. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair, for the small bite. I just remembered something, DG. After 40 years of my mom and dad having married, their death certificate, when issued by Home Affairs, was certified as never married. After 40 years, which made it difficult for us to claim their things, we had to go to processes, eventually, we did get what was rightfully ours, but it seems to be happening with each and every family members. For the people who were registered married then, I don't know if it's the past imbalances or whatever, but it's something that needs to be rectified within the Home Affairs Department. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Just want to suggest that some of the questions are specific cases that need direct response or based on the cases. I want to suggest that we give them those cases, follow them up and give feedback, because it may be a problem to respond on them now. And some of the questions are statistics in nature may need numbers in terms of response, which is something may not be readily available in this meeting. I will suggest that we have those ministers in writing, because you may not have figures of those. But I want to thank members for their engagement. Also remind the department that when we ask questions, it's not policing. It's trying to strengthen the department as we do our oversight. I want to start, Minister, from my side by asking a question that said, if you were to put, is it possible, or if you were to put it in, Honorable Mamburu, the DG won't hear me. Can we... because I want him to hear what I'm saying. Yeah. If we were to put it, it may not be 2 pages, because it's clear. I agree with you, Minister. I was sitting with JSC in Mpumalanga. Home Affairs was not represented. It was not considered as a security department. Each time and again, we'll ask why is Home Affairs not part of this cluster. If we were to put it in 2 pages or 3 pages, or is it possible that you can put Home Affairs today and Home Affairs, what Home Affairs is supposed to be, so that when we engage, where we engage as a committee, we are able to have a summary of what we are talking about now. You see, we are receiving these problems through an annual report. I want a picture of Home Affairs. If you are to say in Home Affairs, you will never have enough money, but sufficiently funded or functioning, what are we talking about? If we can have that summary so that we are in a position to speak about something that we is in writing. In your summary, don't forget about the input that was made by the minister at the beginning, offices, areas that don't have Home Affairs and they are overly populated. The second matter for me, the issue of records. Yeah, that one is very important, Minister. Very, very important. So we are so many of us, especially those of us who took AMA IDs during the apartheid era. In one way or the other, there will be something wrong. But now, I've been wanting to go to Home Affairs to change just a month. With me, it is a month, not a year. Not a date, a month. They decided to put a 7 instead of 1. And I know in the form that I wrote, I even know how I wrote that one. But there is no way that you can get my documents now, because they are not automated. They are hard copies. I don't know how much storerooms do you have for those documents. I want to say that should serve as one of your priorities. The automation of your records. There's also when I was going to that event, Minister, the shackle driver, because on my itinerary was saying the following day I'll be going to Marabastad. He was asking me nicely in the morning, "Ma'am, what are you going to do at Marabastad? Have you been there? Do you know Marabastad? It's dirty, it's filthy, there's a lot of crimes, full of foreign nationals. I mean, I'm scared to go there." He was saying that he's from Pretoria. I said, but they won't take the president there if the environment was still the same as you are saying. But when we go to those offices, he himself got lost. He said, "No, this is not the Marabastad I know. I know Home Affairs offices, but these are not the Home Affairs offices." It says the extent in which those offices has been changed. It's not only me or us who see, but also people from the public can see that. He was saying to me when we're waiting to be getting accreditation, "You see, there's no crime here. I can walk around. I will not do that before." It's a person from Pretoria. That is the impact that you have made with that office. Also, to congratulate you again. There was a question about crime. What are you doing? If you were part of that event, you would have seen physically what is happening there. All offices has got cameras there. Not only cameras, in between the offices, there are open windows. You can see what the next person doing, the next person. At the end of the offices, there's a manager there. And the motivation that the staff had, I asked one of them that, aren't you scared of these cameras so you don't have privacy? He was saying, no, we're fine with it. We like it because ourselves are secured now. If it is a closed office, you don't know what the person will do. Sometimes people come here very angry. So we're very much comfortable with the camera. The team building, the manner in which we have informed them about the strategy, make them own what is happening in the department, is very much encouraging. And what was also striking for me, I was with the DDG. He knows everything that is supposed to be done by an officer at a desk. When they were slow, he would say, no, man, let me do it fast. We don't have time. He will explain to me, it doesn't happen in most cases. You will only know if you're a DDG, issues of policy and strategy. What is happening at the desk of an officer? But I saw that in Home Affairs, meaning that you're doing a very good job, the minister and the DG. I've learned now when you were presenting that maybe why you are where you are now today, you have been able to master planning. In any organization where planning is done properly, it will change the entire organization. The manner in which you, the SMART indicators, that's where most of departments miss it. When they plan, they don't put SMART indicators, and then there's no way of measuring them. But you have to improve DG on the issue of monitoring and the verification, because from the AG's report, he's talking about that. He's talking about the clear linkages between your performance and the budget, also your targets. Verifiable evidence. So you will have to improve that, but I think you got it right. Once you have your planning right, your indicators, your monitoring and evaluation, you'll be gone. So the last issue from my side on the report is the continuous improvement. Starting from 53% to 81%, it's not a child's play. That is enormous improvement by the department. We really appreciate that, Minister. It confirms what I've been saying all along, that getting a clean audit, I'm not saying I'm coming to the finances, don't get me wrong. Getting a clean audit does not mean that you're performing. It's saying you are managing your finances correct, but you may not be performing in terms of the performance. So if you can just correct this issue of finances, I think you'll be fine. Honorable Zwane said a lot about it. I'm not going to go to it. And there are clear issues that are coming from the Auditor General. You know that when we are here, we raise issues that we have seen, especially on the oversight or taking Parliament to the people by NCOP. I'm going to raise these things not for you to respond, but follow them up, DJ. George, but I think it goes the same as the issue that was raised by the minister earlier. George, Western Cape, Lai Western Cape, Eden District, their township, I can't remember the township, but they talk about a multi-purpose center there. They've reserved offices for Home Affairs, but Home Affairs is not agreeing to use those offices. If you could follow that one up. Alfred Nzo, rural areas. If rural development is a priority in the country, those were the words of the minister, Home Affairs could have been prioritized. most children in schools there, not most, a number of them, sizable number of children, do not have IDs. It's not the department when they explain the teachers, the parents, maybe parents themselves don't have IDs because of their activities, illegal activities there. But at the end of the day, that is affecting the learners there. If the department could follow that one up, Alfred Nzo, if your provincial office could follow that one up. Ipel Bridge, I'm not going to talk about it because I'm hoping that it will be supported by EPMA together with Ilebombo, where we visited. We visited Ilebombo through a provincial week, Ipel Bridge, as an oversight by the committee. But I want to comment on the BMA. Our expectation, I don't know what you have there, Minister, because you have not yet presented to us. Our expectation is that all departments that are involved at the border post should. I don't want to say surrender because people don't want to surrender. Those activities should be done by that entity that we are forming. That is the reason we are coming up with this agency, because having different departments is not working. I heard some of the questions that came from the members are not related to Home Affairs. But because we know Home Affairs, we have Home Affairs in this committee, they will ask those questions from Home Affairs. Having this BMA is a very important thing for us to have it finalized and start operating. It will solve a number of problems. Ipel Bridge, they said, together with Ilebombo, amaphoyisa, they don't rotate them. You will have police that were there for donkey years. So corruption is highly possible, because you know that this sergeant so-and-so, I'll talk to him, he will help me. One thing that I've seen improved in that office, Desmond Tutu, is that even your interpreters now are not in the building. They are outside there. You talk to them and you don't know them. So meaning that there is no way that an interpreter and the foreign national person will say something that the officer will not hear. It is heard by all of them on the speaker, but you cannot make a relationship with them because you don't know them. So with this entity, it will solve a number of issues. These are the issues from our side, Minister, but I think also members have some commitments. Answer what you can answer, but other questions that you will not be able to answer now, you can put them in writing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your questions. I'll deal with some questions and let the team address other questions, and as the chair guides us, some of the questions we may not answer, we will promise to come back. You see, for example, the question about the chair raises of the BMA, we will come back on that. We agree with the principle of integration of services. The question about the chair also makes a request for us to present a two-pager on what Home Affairs ought to do. We will bring back. On Thursday, we're presenting to the JCPS the business case for the repositioning of Home Affairs. We're reconsidering the way the department is viewed. And in terms of what does it do. Because in the past, we've always been thought of as a department offering low-value services. And you see that reflected in our resources. If your job is just to open at 8:30 and just start issuing IDs, birth certificates, death certificates, that's what you are going to... You're going to be given money for that. If your job is not viewed in relation to the economy and national security, in relation to the building of a capable state and service delivery, your resources will therefore negate those aspects. So we will make a presentation because we don't have a two-pager on this. We have a full business case. So we would love to present that business case for you to understand. Cabinet has already agreed to locate Home Affairs into the security cluster. So we are a full member of the security cluster now. And one of the things that are being considered is the possibility of us being able to charge for services in order to self-resource. Because there is a possibility for that. One of the difficulties in the government system is that there is some rigidity that makes innovation difficult. Now, a department like Home Affairs that lives completely outside the box, I mean, at the present moment, we really live outside the box. We don't confine ourselves to the normal things that people say. I mean, if you think about it, there was a stage where nobody thought of the smart ID card. There was a stage when nobody thought you could get Home Affairs services at a bank and a whole range of other services. We've really broken down those barriers and said these things can be done and in a secure manner. In actual fact, one of the things that heartened me with regards to our discussions about the e-Home Affairs was how people say to you, but Minister, how safe are the banks? I'm like, oh, you trust Home Affairs more than you trust the banks. That's good. It's very good. People trust that our systems are more secure than the banks. And we of course, you don't want to exploit that at the expense of the banks who must become your partners. But it also says that you're doing something right. The confidence levels are up about the department. You need to then give them that guarantee. But having said that, let me just start from the beginning and answer some of the questions that were asked. And I'm just going to jump around, so DG, you will note. With regard to people with critical skills whose documents have expired, we actually find that that's a grouping that is least risky for us, because people with critical skills mostly comply, and where their documents have expired, it's largely because there are delays in renewing their document. That's why we are introducing these all of these technologies at head office to speed up the adjudication of visa applications, both for people who are outside the country and those who are in the country. But once we do that, we will then free up some people to be able to deal with adjudications to assist in the process. The department is going to be conducting some inspections at certain companies with limited resources, because I think honorable members must understand what the DG was saying. Home Affairs has got 750 immigration officers in South Africa. If you break that down just in two provinces, you've got 76 in Gauteng, the heartland of our immigration challenge, 76 immigration officers. You've got 48 in the Western Cape. If you go down to the George Neisner Plattenberg Bay Belt, which is a high tourism and hospitality area, you've got 5 immigration officers. So if you look at what they do on a daily basis, So you'd find maybe one is doing administration, the other one is probably transporting immigrants who are being repatriated, the other one could be sick, the other one could be doing something else, and then you think there's going to be one who's going to do an inspection. So if you look at these 750 immigration officers for Home Affairs nationally, the police at OR Tambo alone have 800 police officers. Immigration officers in London, the city, at 3,000. We've got only 750 for the whole country. We've been given some money, but in the for the next financial year, not this one, 2017-18, for the 2018-19, to recruit immigration officers, increase our immigration officer complement. So we are, yes, yeah, and that's only for 17 more, 17. So the issues of security, honorable members, are very, very vital, extremely, extremely vital. In a world where you've had just in December last year, you had a terrorist attack in Germany. Nobody in any country must sit back and think that their country is immune from security challenges. We South Africans tend to have this fantasy that the world loves us, that we have no risks whatsoever. Nothing would ever happen in this country. Let me say to you, if a bomb exploded at the waterfront or in Sentin, the impact on tourism, not just in these two provinces, but in the whole region of Southern Africa, would be enormous. South Africa has a responsibility not only to secure herself, but to secure the rest of the region and communicate a positive message about the region. Because if anything were to happen here, people would say, I mean, there was Ebola in the West Africa and people didn't come to South Africa. We had nothing to do with this. Except to the extent that we live in the same continent. But if anything were to happen in South Africa, make no mistake, the impact on the rest of the region, and I'm just citing the region here, I'm not even talking about the rest of the continent, would just be enormous. That is why we must not relent in terms of our security alertness and running our and managing our immigration programs on a risk-based basis. Now, that then takes me to the issue that was raised by the Honorable Harting, the two issues he raised. I honestly don't know who he's speaking for, whether he's speaking for South Africans or somebody else. Now, no, you're not. I listened to you, sir, so give me a chance to listen to you too.
Who's acting chair? I have to object to this line of insult that the minister is leveling at me.
You accusing
me of some underhandedness here. This is totally ridiculous.
Honorable Hattin, before you can interject.
Honorable Hattin, on behalf of the chairperson, she's coming back to her place. Let us give the honorable minister a chance to reply. Then at the discretion of the chairperson, you will then get an opportunity to respond.
But see, it's not about the reply, it's about the accusation of the minister that I'm operating in an underhanded manner. I have to object to the line of the minister. Accusing a member here of committing, asking an honest question to be underhanded.
Honourable members,
this is totally ridiculous.
We agreed that when we come to this committee, we are members of parliament. So we should behave like one. If we ask questions genuinely, honestly,
on behalf of the people that we represent. I will plead again with honorable members that let's keep that. That is why we've been doing so well as a committee. We never had issues because we maintain that. It doesn't mean that because the ministers from the ANC will not ask him questions. At a committee level, we do that on behalf of the people that we represent. I want to maintain that. Let's keep it to that. Honorable Hutton, can you just allow the minister to respond? Honorable Minister, also avoid words that will provoke members such that he will feel that he's not representing his people, because I think that is what has provoked him, that I don't know who he is representing. Please, members, can we maintain what we've been doing as a committee? We've been doing well, and it has worked for the committee. I want to plead with you. Please, just allow the minister to finish. I will give you follow-up questions and raise your issues to say, no, I was not happy with the manner in which the minister has responded.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I hope that the honorable member would have been called to order then when he asked his question, because I equally feel offended by his two remarks that we responded in a knee-jerk reaction to the New Zealand decision. Secondly, when he concluded his remarks by saying that when the Guptas intervened or something to that extent, I'm extremely offended by that. And I find it very funny that he gets offended, because I've not accused him of anything. I said I don't know who, on whose behalf he's speaking. I've not accused him of anything. Now, if the honorable member feels that I'm touching a raw nerve, then I can't answer for that. But let me come to the issues he raised. New Zealand imposes a visa requirement on us. The honorable member doesn't condemn New Zealand on behalf of South Africans, who all of a sudden, without an expectation, are now required to apply for a visa. In actual fact, he justifies what New Zealand does by saying, no, they've got an online application process. So it's okay for South Africans to have to pay for a visa to go to New Zealand. It's wrong for New Zealanders to have to pay for a visa to come to South Africa. In addition to which, we had taken a decision that our visa fee for New Zealanders would be only a third of what they charge our people. Now, remember that South Africans pay 10,000 rand to go to London. But British come to South Africa visa-free. My responsibility as the Minister of Home Affairs is to fight for South Africans. And that's what I've been saying to the British, to the EU, I've been saying to people in New Zealand, that I have no responsibility towards your people. My responsibility is to demand, because what the EU then does is to come to us and say, no, but Home Affairs must not impose a visa requirement on us. I say, but you are imposing it gradually on us. I say to them, you know, what we want as a top prize, because when the British came back to us and said, we will now waive the visa requirements for diplomatic and official passport holders, I said to them, it doesn't excite me. Because those of us who hold diplomatic and official passports pay for these using government money. What would excite me is for you to say to me that we are waiving visa requirements for all South Africans. That's what I'm interested in. In actual fact, why don't you keep visa requirements for holders of official and diplomatic passports and waive them for ordinary passport holders. My job is to fight for South Africans. In the visa environment, when I meet with my colleagues, I represent first and foremost the interests of South Africa. So when New Zealand slaps us and now there's another country in the EU which is being put under pressure by Britain to also impose visa requirements on our people. And again, I'll be told, no, Minister, don't. I'll be told by South Africans, don't reciprocate. Accept what they are doing. It cannot be right. Cannot be. But what I have done, because our response to New Zealand was not a knee-jerk reaction by any means. And New Zealand knows that in the area, and every country knows, in the area of international relations, when a country imposes visa requirements on you, it expects reciprocity. It can't say, we impose a visa on you, but don't hit us with a visa because you don't have an online application. Whether we have an online application or not is not their responsibility. They should have thought about how we would respond at the moment they decided that in their own national interest, they will impose a visa requirement on us. They shouldn't say, in our national interest, we impose a visa requirement on you, but in your national interest, don't impose it on us. They've got no right. They can't tell us. So this was not a knee-jerk reaction in any possible way. And it cannot be that, and I've not heard anybody say to us that since we expect a visa from the people of Nigeria, the people of DRC, the people of Madagascar, the people of Rwanda and so on, I've not heard anybody say to me that, Minister, this is a knee-jerk reaction. No. But for New Zealand, yeah, it's a knee-jerk reaction. It's not the first time I hear this argument. I've been listening to it over time. Now, I have directed the department to conduct a complete review of our visa agreements, a complete review. How many countries? Because when we met with the EU ambassador, we agreed with him on a number of things to do, and among others, I said to him that, look, even if you guys don't give us a visa exemption to the entire EU for now, but at least for business people, for these categories, will you give us a visa exemption? They said they would. But they also raised with us the issue which had been raised by some countries in Eastern Europe, that, you see, when these countries, before they join the EU, they have a visa exemption agreement with us. As soon as they join the EU, they then impose a visa requirement on us and hide behind the EU and say, you need to now apply for a visa to come to our country. We say, but we've had a visa agreement with you. They say, no, this is what the EU requires. We then say, fine, that's what the EU requires from you. We will now require from you a visa too. Then the EU comes and we say to them, wait, guys. There are countries like your Britain, your Germany, and others with which we have visa agreements. Let alone the fact that they themselves expect visas from us, we still don't expect visas from them. Because we know if you impose a visa on Britain, about 4 to 6 full flights from Britain are going to be affected. The country's economic interests are going to be affected. And so the decisions are based on country-to-country basis. They are not. We don't take a decision based on some universal approach. We take a decision based on our assessment of each country and what impact will there be on South Africa. So that's why in 2015, when we reciprocated to the British, we only reciprocated at the level of the diplomatic and official passport holders. So when we do this review, complete review, looking at Africa, Latin America, Asia, and Europe, we will then make a determination on which countries to expect visas from, which countries to renegotiate with, which countries to maintain on our visa-free requiring countries, and so on. Now, ports of entries are national key points. The legislation requires that ports of entry must be designated and proclaimed by government, and must be open for any user who wishes to land there, providing they meet the requirements. The legislation doesn't say that a private family can have a port of entry of their own. Now, I don't want to comment much on this because it's a matter that's in court, but I think to the extent that my affidavit has been made and made public, that much I'm prepared to say. There's no family that has a right to have a private airport, a private port of entry. No family whatsoever. There's someone else also in Cape Town who's requesting the same for himself, and that's not going to happen. And so that's as much as I'm prepared to say. But these are secure areas. And once we agree to the proposition that the highest bidder and the one prepared to pay government for private services must do so, we are setting a precedent that would be wrong. Because if somebody came to me tomorrow and said, on the basis of this precedent, I want you to establish a home affairs in my house and I will pay for it and I will pay for your staff, then I must agree. Because there is a precedent that's already been set. The principle cannot be acceptable. Government can't be sold to the highest bidder. Now, I wish not to comment on an allegation made in a media statement about a conversation between two people. I was not one of those people. So, a pilot is sitting at the cockpit, flying an aeroplane, full in the air, the engines are running, and he overhears two people talking to one another at the back of the aircraft. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. It's unbelievable. Sitting in the cockpit, he overhears people sitting at the back of the aircraft. The engines are running. They are up in the air. I'm not one of the two people. I'm not one. I'm not sitting with the pilot. I'm not on this aircraft. And the conversation doesn't involve me. But it's not the people who are having a conversation who are in court. It's me. I was not on the plane. I was not in the conversation. I was not flying the aircraft. I'm the one who is in court. On the basis of spurious allegations that are being made, well, those allegations will have an opportunity to be tested in court, because it's not me who must explain this. It's the person making the allegation who must provide proof, irrefutable proof of what allegation they have made. This cannot therefore be linked with my reasons, because in my affidavit, honorable members, to court, I have not made any reference to this. The reasons I provided in the extensive letter I gave to the applicant stuck to the letter of the law. Didn't make any allegations about anything else outside what the Immigration Act says. I proclaim port of entry. And I couldn't talk about anything, because if the law said, yes, you could do this, Minister, then we would have to deal with additional things. I can't deal with them now because those issues need to go to court. But the issue that I'm raising is that the issues of security are very important. We will, Honorable Mpambo Sibhukwana, we will bring the... I think we need to come and brief the committee on corruption in the department and the steps we have taken. Very bold steps, I'm happy. The head of Beitbridge is in prison. Well, not prison, but he's on bail. Yeah, he's out on bail, but he's suspended in the department, he's standing trial. 22 members of Immigration Service all arrested on the same day in Lesotho, at the Lesotho border post. Plus 5 Basotho nationals that were involved in that scam, plus 2 immigration officers operating at Lindela. This is but, I'm citing but, one of the cases. There is another head of our office in Scottsboro, who's also been arrested. Quite a lot of people have actually been arrested. I think since we launched Operation Visamasina 2 years ago, just over a year ago, we've recorded very good success, including in Nelspruit, involving even immigrants, Etumgeni, and many other areas. The DG will talk to the steps we are taking with regard to gender equality and people with disability. The issues of drugs and crime at our port of entry are the reason why we need the Border Management Authority and an integrated one. And Cabinet has agreed that it must have some information gathering capability, but we will work with other agencies. And the issues that were, in our opinion, that were raised by, as concerns by police and the National Defense Force and National Treasury have been addressed. We think those issues are not there anymore. We've addressed those issues. That's why we are feeling we need to go on. Now, coming to the issue of employment, and you see, that's why we are saying this repositioning of Home Affairs is so important. It changes the way we look at things. We've got a project that we are working on to revamp the physical and systems infrastructure of 6 ports of entry, commercial ports of entry, plus an additional project to upgrade 10 ports of entry. So what we are now doing, and a directive I've given the department, is to outline how many jobs will be created in all of these projects, and what will be the socio-economic impact of these upgrades. Because when, if you upgrade Beitbridge, and not upgrade, overhaul it, you are then going to enable the North-South corridor economic trade. You will speed up the processing, particularly of heavy vehicles, which would reduce the time wasted by trucks at Beitbridge, which impacts on the trade and their businesses from points of origin to points of destination. Many of them are destined for the Durban Harbour. So we are quite excited. We should, during the course of this year, get our Treasury approval number 2, which should put us in a position to start calling for tenders, getting the construction companies to come on board and present, because we're looking at no more facelifting for Beitbridge, a complete overhaul. No more facelifting for Lesotho, Libombo, or Oshuk, or Kopfontein, or Maseru, or Fixback. A complete overhaul. So that's what we are working towards. We're quite excited. I mean, we can only hope that all of the work that needs to be done and the employment and so on will start happening. And people begin to associate Home Affairs with more than just mere issuing documents, important as it is, it's our core mandate, but with also creating jobs and bringing in skills and developing the economy. The shortage of personnel per province, we can come back on that with that information. The timeline for the eradication of the smart cards, we will talk to that in the near future. In the next few weeks, we should talk about that because we want to discontinue issuing the green barcoded document. All our offices now, you can no longer apply for the passport manually. The manual application for the passport is done. So we want to move on towards a new project that take advantage of that. The Centurion office is now going to be fully automated. A number of other offices, about 14 during this financial year. And with that, we are going to then announce plans for the discontinuation of the green barcoded document, and we start with the smart ID card. We issue the smart ID card only. But we will also be piloting the mobile offices. Now, the mobile office for the smart card is different. Different because it's not those vans that we have. They were not customized for the smart ID card. This one comes, it's mobile. It enables us to go to rural areas, to go to schools, to service children at school so that they don't have to come to our offices. Go to rural areas so that we can deal with the challenge that some of our offices there are unable. So we also think that's going to assist us a great deal. The issue of the budget, as I say, in our business case, we are presenting a proposal on how the department could self-fund. There is a number of opportunities we've looked at where the department could generate revenue to fund our programs, to increase our capacity, especially at strategic areas, but we just need to agree on a model and formula with National Treasury and Cabinet. Once that happens, we think it's going to assist us a great deal. We also, I'm happy, Honorable Members, as a way of concluding with the comments on that the clean audit doesn't necessarily mean you are performing. But that on its own must not mean we must relent in our pursuit for clean audits. We can achieve both. Good quality performance and clean audits. And we're working towards that. We're quite confident that we will be able to achieve that objective. So I will ask the officials to then deal, DG, with the rest of the questions.
Minister, I just want to suggest that we get the responses in writing. We covered almost most of the questions. I will request that we have the remaining questions, responses in writing. But I just want to go back to the issue that you were also expecting a point of order. Well, Minister, we are representing provinces here in the NCOP. It's unlike in the NA where they represent political parties. When we raise issues, you heard me when I was talking about the offices, I spoke to Mpumalanga because I'm representing Mpumalanga. Besides that, I'm a chairperson. I'm here representing Mpumalanga. We agreed as members that we're not going to stop members asking issues that relate to their provinces because that is why they are here. Their constituencies are there. So we then agree that we'll not stoop down to a level that we call points of order because I know what is troubling Umala. But it goes to the question of patriotism. I want to make one example. I watched Iprotea Proteas when they were playing with England, I was so shocked to see that England had more supporters in the Western Cape than the Proteas. I want to repeat this. When England, I like cricket, I do watch it. When Proteas were playing England, here in the Western Cape, England had more supporters than our own national team, the Proteas. It tells you something on our patriotism in our country. It's very much important to know those things, that you will find yourself, ourselves, in England, in South Africa. It was a serious statement for me to say, people of Western Cape decided to support England over their own team, over their own national team. But also to say, you spoke about, I want to conclude about the Bell Bridge issue and the corruption. When we were there, your officials, minister, were saying, no, but it's painful because it's only officials from Home Affairs who are arrested. Other departments are not doing that. So it confirms what you are saying, that you are doing some work. They did say. They gave us a number of them, how many of them were arrested or were charged attending internal cases in the department, also some of them in court. But their concern was that it only happening with Home Affairs. That is when they raise an issue that police are there for years. So their crime is sort of permanent because they have their own permanent clients that passes the border. So it confirms what you are saying. We will try. We are very much tight as a committee. You also requested last time when we met with you that you will want to brief us about other issues because they come as questions to you. And you are limited to answer a specific question instead of giving us a full brief of a program. We'll try to make a day as a committee so that we get a full briefing on other things that you're doing as a department so that we are informed. We don't see them on the media and we respond with limited knowledge because we don't have a full picture of what the department is doing. With those words, the meeting stand adjourned. Thank you very much, Minister, and the team. Thank you.
Thank you. Stop now.